I think we all can agree that the criminal justice system in the United States is far from perfect. It wasn't designed to be perfect. Mistakes are often made. But when a shoddy criminal investigation results in the incarceration of an innocent person, we all should demand answers and accountability. My next guest is Gia Wirtz. She is an award-winning documentary filmmaker whose debut documentary, Conviction, saw amazing success on the festival circuit. The documentary tells the story of Jeffrey Deskovic, who was wrongly convicted, spent years in prison for a crime he didn't commit, and was eventually released. You do not want to miss this show with Gia Wirtz, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. We know you got many options, but thank you for tuning in to the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Top rank because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for sharing it with your family and friends. If you would take a moment and give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcast, we sure would appreciate it. If you're a new listener, welcome. We know you're going to love the shows and the content. If you have been listening for a while, thank you for coming back. We love you all for the support that you have given us over the years. Thank you so much. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved.
I represent Low Cost Airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
800-296-1337. 800-296-1337. 800-296-1337. 800-296-1337.
So excited to be affiliated with the Badge Life. This amazing company is owned and operated by an active law enforcement officer. They have everything from hats, jerseys, workout gear. You're going to love it all. You're going to see a link to the Badge Life in the show notes. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. Folks, if you love coffee, you know what I'm going to tell you. You are going to love the products from Forsaken. Everything from coffees to elixirs to cocos, they have it all. I am a huge fan of the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee, and I bet you will be two. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic, and you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Enjoy. On to the show with Gia Wirtz. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, Gia Wirtz. Are you there, Gia?
I'm here.
Hey, thank you for coming on the show. I wanted to bring you on. Thank you for wanting to come on. I sure do appreciate it. You have an award-winning documentary out there. Can you tell us about that? I find it fascinating, the subject in which you talk about in this critically acclaimed show of yours. Can you go ahead and talk about it, Gia?
Yeah, sure. And first of all, thank you for having me, Patrick.
I mean, of course.
You've been just great. I'd love to tell you about the film. It's called Conviction, and it's released on Amazon Prime. And it is the story of Jeffrey Deskovic, who was 16 years old, and he was a student at Peekskill High School in New York. And unfortunately, a girl in his school was raped and murdered. And at the time in the town of Peekskill, there had been, I think if I remember correctly, it was almost a decade. There had been no such crime, no murders, no nothing like that. And so the town was really shaken up. They were, you know, parents weren't letting their kids walk to school anymore and things like that. They were scared. And the police were under pressure, obviously, to solve this murder. And as they questioned students at school, some of the students said, well, you should talk to Jeff. He's a little bit odd and a quiet kid. And that's kind of where it began. And the police turned their attention on to Jeff, and in the end ended up convicting him of rape and murder. And he went to a max security adult prison at the age of 17.
Yeah.
And that's what the film is about.
Yeah. And it's just, I haven't seen the film yet, but I've read about the case, and you do a lot. You talk about, Gia, you talk about police misconduct and prosecutorial misconduct. And there was a lot of glaring, and I'll be the first to tell you, I'm ex-military, ex-law enforcement, and I'll be the first to tell you, when cops screw up and make mistakes, or they, you know, intentionally don't do something with evidence or test evidence, I think they ought to, we ought to do what we have to do to get them out of our ranks. But this particular case, there was some pretty glaring mistakes, right?
There were. I mean, it was more than mistakes. They got a false confession out of Jeff, and, you know, they treated him pretty badly in order to get that confession. And in order to get the confession, they also lied to him. I mean, he was 16 at the time and very impressionable and didn't have any experience with law enforcement up until that point. And he actually, oddly enough, his goal was to be a police officer. So this whole thing started, the police officers approached him in a friendly manner and said, you know, we would love for you to help us with this case. And he really took to that, because he said, well, in his mind, I wanted to be a police officer, and now I had this chance to help out in a real case with real police officers. And I think another layer on top of that is that Jeff was raised by a single mom. His dad was never a part of his life. You know, he didn't know him. And so these police officers also to him seemed like a father figure, almost a little bit. And so those two things coupled together really got him into this whole world. And so when they had him in, they took him around for a couple of months, I think, if not a little longer, and took him to the crime scene and gave him information and fed him details that he wouldn't have known otherwise. I know. And then the day of the interrogation, when they actually got a false confession out of him, they had a lie detector test there, and they had him take that. And after he took it, they lied to him and said, you know, the lie detector test has already told us that you did it. So we already know through, you know, science that you did it. So you need to verbally just tell us, because we already know. And if you tell us, then you get to go home. And he had been so, it was a 7.5 or 7 hour interrogation, and he had had no food, and he was young, and he was taken out of the county he lives in. So he didn't know where he was, and he was scared. And so he thought in his mind, I'll just say this because they say they'll drive me home after. And so he just said it.
Wow. Now, the obvious question I have, just as former law enforcement, Gia, is where did he ask for an attorney? Where was his parents? I mean, because where was the attorney in all this? I mean, why wasn't he being represented if he was?
Yes, that's the really tough thing. So his mom had said, don't talk to the police. This has nothing to do with you. Don't get involved. And as we can all relate to as 16-year-olds, I know I've done it, he didn't tell his mom. And so he just went ahead and... And so he was doing this, and he thought it was, you know, interesting because he wanted to be a police officer. And so she didn't know that he was doing this. He had a he got an attorney after, you know, once he was charged, he got a
the damage was done after that,
appointed to him, but I guess that didn't work out very well either. But yeah, the damage was done.
Wow. And everything will be linked up in the show notes, just for the listener. You got to see this short documentary. It's very compelling. Now, through all your research, Gia, I mean, let's talk about, you know, police misconduct, prosecutor misconduct. I mean, how often, through the research you've done, I mean, how often does this occur?
You know, I don't know how often it occurs that, you know, it gets this far where somebody's wrongfully convicted of such a crime. But I know the National Police Misconduct Reporting Project did a study, and their data said that roughly 1 in 4.7, so almost 1 in 5 officers are implicated in an act of misconduct. Now, of course, that could be any kind of misconduct, to this level, of course, but that's still a very striking number, you know, first of all. And then the other thing is the Innocence Project estimates on a conservative level that between 2 and 5% of all prisoners in the states are innocent. So by those numbers, we'd be looking at 120,000 people in just our country. So it's a lot, you know?
And you mentioned the Innocent Project. Can you just, for the listeners out there who might not know what that is, can you just tell us what that is?
Yeah, the Innocence Project, I believe, was founded by Barry Scheck, and it is a nonprofit that helps people who are wrongfully convicted. And I think they mostly, I'm not sure about this, but I think they mostly work on exonerating people who have DNA evidence that they mm-hmm. can that they can test. So that's kind of a sure thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, and I've said before, Gia, many times that, you know, the system is not a perfect system. You know, we do make mistakes, mm-hmm. But you know, when it's so glaringly obvious, when it comes to the, you know, Jeskovic case, you know, that's appalling. But yeah, the Innocent Project, I think is important because there are people that get sent away due to a variety of reasons. And a lot of those you mentioned are probably, they didn't have, from what I can remember, they didn't have the DNA available at the time with a lot of these cases. So now mm-hmm. a lot of these cases are being, you know, litigated now and taken up
yes,
by organizations. Go ahead.
Absolutely. There's so many advancements in DNA technology that even if there was DNA in the past, now they have new ways of testing that same DNA to get more information
yeah.
out of it. So there's that aspect as well, in addition to what you were saying.
Yeah. And wrongful convictions, you know, I mean, that's been a hot topic for many years. Before I even got out of law enforcement, and, you know, coercing people and manipulating them to confess. And there are people out there, like, you know, in the case of Jeffrey, who were innocent, but they get convinced, they get through, you know, a lot of manipulation sometimes, unfortunately, to confess to something obviously they didn't do. And especially when, you know, 16 years old, you know, who, you know, wanted to be a police officer, idolized the cops, of course, he's going to be a little bit more, in my opinion, a little bit more easy to manipulate. And the cops took advantage of that.
Absolutely. He was definitely more susceptible,
yeah.
you know, for both of those reasons, not having a father figure and not, and wanting to be a police officer and being kind of fascinated with that world for sure.
Now, why is public, talk about public awareness. And I think a lot of people out there have talked about, you know, the Innocent Project, but what do we need to do to get more public awareness on this issue?
You know, that's so interesting that you asked me that, because that's the question I was asking myself for the past few years.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, you know, what to do, because on one hand, I think, in my opinion, majority of people who haven't been personally impacted by a wrongful conviction, whether it be, you know, a family member or friend, or they know someone, they don't think of it as a real issue. Majority of mm-hmm. people trust law enforcement, and there's, they think that if somebody's charged with a crime, there must be evidence, or they must have done it, and that kind of thing. So it's a tough one. I was asking myself the same thing, and that's how I, through a series of interesting events, that's how I came to realize that making films would be a good way to raise awareness and shed light on this, because more people would see it. And even people who may not so much think this is an issue are very interested in watching films and documentaries and interesting stories, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up in this medium in the first place.
Well, and talking about, like, it's always easy to throw money at people and say, oh, we're sorry that, you know, this happened, here's millions of dollars. But the psychological impact on, you know, on somebody after being incarcerated, the stigma of being incarcerated for a while, even though they might be innocent now. I mean, it's, money can't just fill that void. I mean, money's important, I think, to a degree, but they've lost a portion of their life. You know, they're never going to give it back. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, the money makes the transition back into society a little bit
yeah.
easier, because it takes a little bit of off your plate, but no amount of money, I think, can ever buy back half your life, or
yeah.
you know, your all the years you lost. I mean, with Jeff is such a kind soul. He's a great person, but he himself will tell you that he has after effects. He can't deal with loud noises. He just shuts down.
PTSD and all these
yeah,
other things that he has.
All these other things. Exactly. And all the things you learn, if you think about your own, like, I think about this about myself, everything I learned and did between the age of 16 and, let's say, 34 or what have you, those are such impressionable years, for one. For
yeah.
two, those are the years where you kind of learn who you are, what you like, what you don't like, what do you like in a significant other? You know, that's usually the years that people meet the person they end up marrying or what
yeah.
have you. And he missed all of that. And he very much, very candidly talks about, you know, meeting women today is very, very difficult, because he says that even though he's innocent, first of all, most people have kind of done that already. They've done all their dating and learning about other people and that kind of stuff. And then secondly, he says that very quickly people say, why are you so passionate about wrongful convictions? Because that's what he does for work now. He works with people.
Then he has to get into it.
He gets into it, because it's one of the first things people ask you, what do you do?
Yeah.
And he says lots of women, and I can, being female myself, I can absolutely see this side of it too. And I see Jeff's side too. But being a woman, they say, oh, well, you're innocent, but you spent 16 years in a max security prison. Are you violent? Like, in their mind, they're like, well, should I be scared to be alone with you? Are you a violent
person? Well, that's just a normal human reaction. I mean, especially as a woman, you know, he was accused of this. He got exonerated, but as a, you know, I obviously I'm not a woman, but I could only imagine how a woman would feel and say, okay, well, what's the real story?
If you were innocent, I mean, did you become violent because you had to, and how will that impact me if we ever get in a fight? Or it's just things like that, that women would think about. And so for Jeff, even though Jeff actually did get a settlement, he went on to sue that detective that got the false confession, and he got a good settlement. Yeah, good for him, for sure. And I think he also sued the medical examiner, if I remember correctly. But, you know, none of that money makes it easier for him to date or meet women or get married. And he can't really have kids anymore. And maybe he wanted kids.
Well, a lot of that money is probably going towards treatment and counseling and all this other stuff. I mean,
absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you have an interesting, Gio, we were talking a little bit before we started. You have an interesting kind of, you changed careers. not too long ago. So what was first tell us what your prior career was, and then what was the catalyst to get you into what you're doing now with filmmaking, you know, and being an advocate for what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. So I spent 20 years working in the fashion industry, mostly on the business side, a little bit on the design side as well. And I did that since I was very young. I mean, I started at like 18 and I did it for 20 years. And I loved it so much when I was younger. To me, I thought, you know, I would do this as a hobby. So to get paid to do it and to have a career in it seemed like it was just perfect. And then towards the end, like in the last 5 years or so, I found it to be a little bit less interesting as I got older. I guess I was like, what's really the meaning of just, exactly. And then one day, and a couple of things happened, you know, I had my son. And so I had already left that job and I was kind of debating what I wanted to do next. And then one day my husband came home and he loves podcasts. He listens to podcasts. I mean, in his sleep, it's just constantly.
Good for him. Love podcasts.
And so he came home one day from work and he said, you got to hear this podcast. And this was when podcasts weren't even a thing. And I was like, no, I'm not interested.
It's like, what the hell is that?
And I'm a very visual person. Like, I need the visuals to keep my attention. With podcasts, I now listen to them, but I used to find that my mind would wander off. I would start doing something else because I'm not sitting down and was, you know, commuting or doing whatever, housework.
Yeah.
And so I said no at first. And he said, well, it's a true crime story. And I said, nah. And he's like, because I've always been fascinated with true crime. And then he said, well, it's about a Pakistani family. And my family is Pakistani. And so that intrigued me. And I said, okay, let's listen to one episode over dinner. And he played the first one and I was hooked, and he played the second and third. I was just hooked like the rest of the world because the podcast was the Serial podcast.
Oh yeah. And it's a great show. Great show.
And after listening to it, I was really taken aback because Adnan, who is the subject of Serial, I believe in his innocence. And to me, I thought, well, this was such a well-done podcast and it was a fascinating story and I loved it, but it's not fiction. It's a real person and he's sitting in prison and this is horrific. And so I tried to reach out to the family initially. I didn't hear from them. And I decided that I would do a fundraiser. I would organize a fundraiser in New York to raise some funds for his legal defense fund. And during the process of organizing that, I ended up connecting with the family. And then we did this fundraiser and donated the funds, and that was great. And that got me really back to, you know, this is what I want to do. And if I actually rewind a little bit, when I was 20 or so, I had read this book, Reuben Carter's book, The 16th Round. And till this day, it's still my favorite book. And so I had always had it in the back of my mind that wrongful convictions was something I was really passionate about. And then I heard Serial, and that really put me back on that path. And So through a series of events with Adnan's family, I realized that I could make films because I had a 20-year background in photography when I worked in the fashion industry as well. And I happened to be at Adnan's post-conviction hearing when they were filming HBO's documentary, The Case Against Adnan Syed. And when I saw them doing that, I was like, this is what I can do. This is how I can reach more people. Yes, yes. And then, you know, the rest is kind of the how it got started.
Now, how did you hook up with, how did you find out about Jeffrey's story? And how did you hook up with him, you know, to tell that story?
Yeah. So when I was organizing that fundraiser for Adnan, I was doing it with a friend of mine and we were kind of brainstorming what we could do to raise money. And she said, you know, we were talking about having a speaker there because neither of us were experts in wrongful convictions. And she said, you know, I happened to meet a guy at a party and he had such a similar story to Adnan. He was also 16, you know, also a kid and all of this. And she said, his name is Jeff. Do you want to meet him? And I said, yes. She introduced me to him and that was Jeffrey. And he spoke at my fundraiser for Adnan. And fast forward 4 years later, I went to film school and the first person I thought of that I knew personally was Jeff. And so I called him and said, hey, I'm going to do a documentary and I want to focus on wrongful convictions. Would you be down to do it? And he said, yep. And we started.
Wow. Any accomplishments? These are, I'm reading from your sheet here, 11 film festival official selections, which I'm assuming is good. I don't know a lot about film. And then 3 awards, best cinematography, best picture, and award of distinction. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was just as shocked as you
are. Well, it's just amazing that, you know, you can go from one career. And that's a testament to your dedication and your passion for what you're doing. But, you know, you had this great successful career in the fashion industry and then you became passionate about this and then you were a critically acclaimed, you know, filmmaker now. That's amazing, Gia.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, it's also a testament to Jeff's story. It's
yeah,
a
oh, yeah, of course.
Compelling story. Yeah, for sure. For isn't sure. It? But
oh, go ahead.
Oh, go. No, you please.
No, I was going to say, isn't it amazing how once you, and I know you probably know this, but once you find your passion, I mean, you really never work a day in your life, right?
Well, for sure. 100%. The very first interview I did with Jeff, I came home and I told my husband, like, it just felt right. Everything mm-hmm. about it was, but that is 100% true. So, I couldn't agree more.
So what is it without, what's next for Gia?
So right now I'm working on the feature length version of Jeff's story. So we're just in post-production. I'm almost finished. Actually, because of, you know, the whole COVID thing, it kind of halted production because we were going to film in a prison, but they're not letting anyone in right now, the prison that Jeff used to be at. And so we're waiting to finish the last couple of shots, but that film is almost finished. And wow. So that'll release in 2021. And then I'm starting on a third one. And my goal is to really tell the story of somebody who's currently in prison. So hoping that the film can help raise awareness and help with their case or their release, mm-hmm. ideally.
So if somebody was going to, like, if there's a listener or out there listening to this, and I hope there's a lot, obviously, but if somebody wanted to get into filmmaking and mm-hmm. say, this, I'm listening to Gia, she's killing it, I want to do what she does, what advice would you give them?
So I would say one, start, just start. I mean, if people who usually want to get into filmmaking have some kind of hobby or some kind of skill they're good at, whether it being behind the camera or audio or, you know, something, some aspect of it mm-hmm. that they love, find other people who complement those skills of yours and then start. If you're a camera person, find an excellent audio person or producer and director. You only need a small team. I made that film with 4 people. And
wow.
And it's all you needed. And I've always loved being behind the camera. So I got other people who had complementary skills. And I did that by enrolling in a documentary program at New York Film Academy. There, I met great people. I made sure to assess the class and see who were the stars in that classroom. And I connected with them and they helped me work on this film and I helped them with theirs in return. Mm-hmm. And that's how we started the film. Then of course it took a little more work after that, after I finished the program at New York Film Academy. But my advice would be, one, to get started. It doesn't matter what you're doing. I used to go outside, even when I had to take my son to the park, I would take my camera with me and shoot B-roll of police cars and anything else. Just keep working on it. You know? Yeah. And the second thing is just get educated, educate yourself as much as possible. I not only went to New York Film Academy, but when it finished the program, I took 44 masterclasses online because it was right at the height of the pandemic. So we were all stuck inside. So I took that time to learn as much as I could and connect with other filmmakers. And, you know, funny enough, people thought that the pandemic would really hinder all of this. And I found that it actually helped me a lot because people were all home and stuck at home that don't want to be stuck at home. And so filmmakers who normally would be too busy and not accessible willing to hop on Zoom calls. Yeah. Cause they were happy to chat about what they love and they had nothing else to do.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, I think I think it's all in perspective, right? Because even, I mean, it has been a difficult time. I'm not trying to mitigate it. You know,
it's been
horrible, but it's also a time for opportunity. And so, I mean, if you heard the old saying, you know, making, you know, lemonades out of lemons, it's all how you look at things, right? I mean, you could look at something and say, I'm just going to be in a bad mood for a year, or I can actually try to, you know, take advantage of the situation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, not everybody can do that. Of course, everyone's job doesn't lend itself.
Sure.
That is what I did. I looked at my film, which was, you know, whatever, 50% done. And I thought, uh-oh, now what?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, now that I'm just home and can't do anything else, why don't I edit the film and get it almost to the point of completion? And then I'll just go back and film the other shots later, which is not the normal order of things when you're making a film. But that's what I did. And that's how we have a film that's 90% finished. Because so there's always things you can, you know, figure out and do pivot.
Yeah. And what I really like about that, Gia, is the very first thing you said is just start. I think so many times people wait for all the traffic lights of light to be green at the same time. And the reality is they're not. So just do it.
They're never going to happen.
You know, it's never going to be a perfect time.
It's never going to be a perfect time. And, you know, just taking action, even if it's small actions, even if it's shooting B-roll while your kid's at the park or what have you, it all
amounts. What's B-roll?
B-roll is like all the extra footage you see in a film. It's not the prime interviews. It's
B-roll. I should have.
B-roll is like, you know, when you're watching a movie and there'll just be a shot of a cop car driving by and it's not anything, but it's just the extra footage that's
learning something every day.
To finish B-roll. A film. Yeah. And you need a lot of B-roll in documentaries because nobody wants to sit there just watching a talking head interview, right? My point was, is that whatever you can do when you take an action, as no matter how small it is, it all builds momentum. And the first action will make you want to take the second and the third and the fourth. And, you know, soon enough, you'll have a short film or what have you.
Do you ever think that you're going to, because you're doing a lot for, you know, shedding light on some shortcomings of the criminal justice system. Are you interested in getting into another aspect, or are you pretty much going to do that? Do you know, at this point?
I think I'm going to do this, but it's really hard to say because, you know, I just started this a year and a half ago. So I'm really just in the beginning stages of this. So it seems like this is it, but who knows where it'll take me down the line. Right. But my goal is to just continue to make documentaries specific to this topic of wrongful convictions.
That's awesome. Well, Gia Wirtz, thank you so much, ma'am, for coming on the show. If people want to find this amazing documentary, you mentioned Amazon, right? Amazon Prime.
Yep.
They can find it there. And where can they find more information about you and the great things you're doing?
Yeah, sure. On Amazon Prime. So there are a couple of films named Conviction. So if they search Conviction and my name, it'll come up. They can find me on my website, which is just giawertz.com. It's giawertz.com. And on Instagram, it's Gia Docs, short for documentaries.
Well, Gia Wirtz, thank you so much. Much success to you in the future. I'd love to have you back on down the road and talk more about your great work and anything we can do for you. Anything we can do for you. Of course, we'll promote this. Everything will be linked up in the show notes that we talked about. And again, everybody see Conviction. Great show. I'm going to watch it after this. And again, I've done a lot of research on it, so I can't wait to watch it. Gia Wirtz, thank you for coming on. Much success to you in the future. Anything we can do for you, please reach out.
Oh, thank you so much, Patrick. I would love to come back on any old time. And for the listeners, if there anything they can do is if you do watch the film, give us a review on Amazon as an independent film. That helps a ton. So whatever you think of it, good or bad, you're welcome to leave feedback.
I'm going to go watch Devil Wears Prada right now because that's what I'm thinking about. I'm just kidding.
That's awesome.
All right, Gia.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.